Hey there, welcome to the Student to CEO podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Mason. We're talking to entrepreneurs who launched their business at a young age and they're now killing the game. Tune in to our episodes as these guests spill the dirt on taking that leap into entrepreneurship just like they did. Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of the Student to CEO podcast. Joining us today is Brandon Amoroso. Brandon founded Electric Marketing in March 2018 while attending the University of Southern California to help businesses grow their digital footprint and thrive in an age of digital surplus. Through his e-commerce experience and knowledge of startup marketing, Brandon has been able to perfect his craft and continue expanding his digital marketing company. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now let's start off by having you share with our audience what you do with Electric Marketing and what led you to start something like that.
Yeah. So we are an inbound marketing agency. So we really oversee the entire customer journey from not only getting visitors to a website, but how do we nurture them and capture them as a lead and take them all the way through purchase and then post-purchase retention as well. We primarily work with e-commerce businesses, but we have started to work with a few B2B clients as well. And really our specialization comes down to marketing automation and segmentation. Everything that we do, whether it's on social media or a website, everything's designed to drive new contacts to grow the list, to ultimately grow revenue. And I started back when I was in high school working for a direct-to-consumer wine company based out of LA as like the social media intern. And then from there was able to expand my role pretty rapidly because of the growth that company was experiencing. And I was in a unique position because it was a startup that I was able to probably take on more than I would have been able to otherwise, given my age. And then ultimately worked at that company until my sophomore year of college when I split off to do freelancing. And then about a year into the freelancing is when I sort of figured out that it would be better if I had a team supporting all the strategy and initiatives I was working on. And so by the time I graduated in May of last year, I gotten it to the point where I was able to hire one full-time employee. And since then we've been able to continue to scale and to continue to grow.
Awesome. So what has it been like for you kind of in this transition phase of from when you graduated last year to now of being like officially full-time with Electric Marketing after not having to be a student anymore?
Yeah, it's great. I had so much time freed up when I graduated because I didn't have to deal with classes anymore. And it was sort of getting to the point where I was done with school. So it was good timing because as the business continued to grow, it began to take more and more of my time away from my studies. And so it really sort of lined up perfectly with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I think that's so funny about your story is that it's really similar to mine. I mean, I also have a marketing firm, which I also started during my sophomore year of college, which I also took full time after graduating last year. So I think it's just funny how we're both in similar places and having similar experiences. But one question that I have for you kind of relating to that is a lot of people, when they're getting to the point where they want to take their business full time or they're ready to do so, how do you know when you're able to do it? Like for you, how did you know besides simply graduating and of course needing a job, how did you know you were at that point where Electric Marketing could be sustainable?
It's really just the revenue coming in the door was honestly what decided it. It was either going to be able to support me or it wasn't. Unfortunately, it was able to support me plus another team member. And then so from there, it really was just concentrating on making sure that we keep that base and really make sure that our retention rates are high and that we're producing great work for our current clients so that we continue to keep that recurring revenue coming in, but also to further expand and scale because there with that comes more efficiencies, better work product for the clients, and also a little bit of security as well. The bigger you are, it's a lot easier to go from two people to nothing than it is to go from six, like we are now, to nothing. So just continuing to grow and scale is really important. But it also, it depends on if you're bootstrapping it or if you're raising money. If you raise money, then obviously it's different. But when you're just starting it with your own money, it really just comes down to the revenue that you're bringing in, because you have to be able to support yourself and then any team members and all the other associated costs with owning and running a business.
Yeah, all great points. And so while you're in college and working on building up your marketing firm, how are you basically obtaining these clients? Like, what avenues were you using for sales, and how were you kind of onboarding people and getting them interested in the services that you offered and helping them realize that it can really benefit them and their companies?
Yeah, I worked for a lot of small businesses for free in the beginning stages to build up the reviews and a few case studies, so that I wasn't going to, like, you have to be able to work your way up market. It's not like you're going to start working with Fortune 500 companies right off the bat, because that would be wholly unrealistic. So I really started by offering up my services for free to 1 to 5 person companies in and around the LA area. I would reach out to them on their contact forms, on their website, via email. I'd call them, I'd go to events and try to solicit them in person. The in-person connections and meetings are definitely the best, which has unfortunately gone to the wayside in the last couple of months, but that's probably the number one way I would say to get your name out there, is to start to build actual personal connections. Obviously it has to be authentic though. So typically I'll approach all the meetings in that I'm really looking for a professional connection. And then if something comes of it that's work related, great. Most of the time, it may not, but then you're really introduced to that person's entire network as well. And so it's also just really interesting to get to meet new people in other industries and to continue to grow your skill set in that way.
Yeah, most definitely. And so I think that depending on the industry, I think that being able to offer pro bono work in order to make these connections, get more experience, and build up your own case studies is a really great thing to do, and something that I did as well. But for people who are also considering doing this, kind of giving something away for free, what's your advice on transitioning from free to paid? Like, how do you tell your free clients, like, that you're going to start charging for something now? Or how do you know when would be a good time to actually start offering these as paid services?
Well, I established an understanding with them at the very get-go that it was temporary, that, look, I'm going to do this for you because I'm unproven, but that there's an understanding that after like 3 months that there would be payment if certain benchmarks and goals were met. Because obviously you don't want to just be completely taken advantage of, because naturally people will continue to give you more and more things to do. So you need to make sure that you're appropriately compensated, at least at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And so once you started to get those clients for the pro bono work that you were doing, and also doing the in-person events and stuff, did your clients, like, following that, come from referrals, or what was that like?
Yeah, so referrals is definitely a big one, but also just pounding the pavement in terms of LinkedIn and email outreach. It all sort of builds upon itself. So you have people that you, so for example, one of our best clients in terms of our relationship with them, and also the referrals that they brought in for us, was completely cold. We just reached out on a whim, and they happened to come in. And so then we did a really great job for them, and they've been a great sounding board for us for new prospects that come in. So that was one that came out of nowhere. And then there's others where you sort of look to your own personal connections and sort of mine those relationships that you have, because it's always better to have like a warm intro. And so I try to look at sort of my inner circle and inner network and see what opportunities were around there. It also helps tremendously to be able to have case studies. Like, it is one thing to go to somebody without any sort of like backing to what you're saying, and it's a completely other thing if you go to a company and you have a demonstrated track record in that specific industry of producing results for a brand that they are familiar with. And so even if you're reaching out to somebody cold that way, there's that level of familiarity that is hard to beat.
Absolutely. And what was the most difficult part of starting your business while young?
I think the most difficult part is learning everything on the fly. Like, there's so much in school that you aren't taught at all. Like, frankly, don't think I learned anything in school that was relevant to the business today, especially from like an operational standpoint with all of the taxes, the payroll, especially in California, things like having to have workers' compensation and then everything you got to go through to get healthcare insurance for everyone. There's just so many moving parts and pieces and deadlines that you have to keep track of. And it's like it's the part that nobody wants to talk about of entrepreneurship or having your own business, because it's definitely the least sexy and not fun.
Yeah, you're so right. I remember during my junior year of college, I took an entrepreneurship course, and this entrepreneurship course focused on like showing case studies of what were dubbed small businesses, but really small businesses is a very broad term and can be people with like 500 employees. And yeah. It's like nothing was relevant. So the information and whatnot, and you're right. I mean, learning something in school is completely different than actually executing it. And so just having to actually figure it out on your own is a challenge in itself.
Yeah. It's also glorified. The tech startup has been glorified, like over glorified is probably the term I would use. And there's not a lot of attention paid to just starting a business from the ground up, not going and raising money and bootstrapping it and building something that's maybe a little bit more sustainable, but not necessarily ever going to be a $10 billion valuation company. And that is sort of left out of a lot of college education and curriculum, I feel like, where there's a big focus on like the Ubers and the Snapchats, which there's only a handful of these companies in the world versus the millions of small businesses that are operating otherwise. So that's probably the one like nitpicky thing I have with the entrepreneurial education in college, was I was a little bit focused on that angel that sort of pie in the sky versus something that was maybe a little bit more realistic. But, and I'd say the other thing that was difficult for us is when you are bootstrapping, basically what we had to do, I had to build like a really solid network of part-time employees, because for example, with website design, we didn't have that demand to be able to hire a full-time web developer and to take that overhead cost, but we still had some demand from our clients for it. But we still needed to be able to maintain a high quality level of work. And so we had to really pick and choose our part-time workers very well so that we were able to scale without having to bring on any capital, because there's like a tipping point for each specific service that we offer where it becomes realistic to have somebody full-time. But until we had gotten to those points, we were sort of putting it together with bits and pieces. So honestly, where we're at today as a company is a whole lot more or less stressful than it was a year ago, where we were using part-time people to piece together things. And we've been able to gradually transition them into full-time. And so now we have like a point person on each specific area we work on, from web design to SEO, to social, to PR. And it's just much more sustainable and easy to scale from this point. But it was much more difficult to get here. It's going to be a lot easier to move on from this point because we already have that foundation. But getting to this foundation without raising money was pretty difficult.
That's such great advice. And I feel like what you just shared there can really be applied to any part of running a business. It's like once you, like, I feel like the hardest part or one of the hardest parts is just actually getting those systems and processes in place. But then once you do, everything is just so easy from there on out, because it's almost like you just have it on autopilot and all figured out. So I think that was great advice that you shared there.
Yeah. I don't want people to get like too carried away with organizational structure, but it definitely is important. And it's something that you kind of just learn on the fly, and Google's your best friend. So I spent countless hours and days researching what the best ways were to organize our teams for our clients. And ultimately we just decided to scratch the whole account manager thing. And we've really had to hire team members they're really good at what they do, but they also can be client facing. So even our engineering team is client facing. Everybody dialogues with the clients. There's no roadblock between who's actually executing on the work and who's talking with the client, which I think has been awesome for us. And it also keeps our costs down too, as well as our clients, because we're not paying for that intermediary that is unnecessary, at least at this point in our growth.
Absolutely. And I can imagine that that probably prevents bottlenecking from happening too.
Yeah. Yeah. This communication is very streamlined, which has been super helpful. And it actually is relatively new. About a month and a half ago, we completely changed over our entire systems to monday.com from Trello. And then we also integrated our entire process into Slack. So now we share a dedicated channel with all of our clients. And so all of our clients have direct access to any of us at any time for questions and for real-time feedback and collaboration, which really plays into our ethos of slotting into these small businesses as a true part-time, if not full-time employee. Like, we really are invested and are actually working and integrated with their team, as opposed to maybe a more traditional client agency relationship.
You just brought something up that I want to touch upon a little bit more. So you mentioned being able to bring your clients into your project management system, so that way they really have those easy touch points for you. But how do you set those boundaries too? Because I think a lot of people worry if they bring their clients into their project management systems or open up more communication levels, that their clients may be calling them at 10 o'clock at night or messaging them at 12 p.m. on a Saturday and stuff like that. So how do you kind of still allow and still make your clients feel like that they're supported and you're here for them without them almost taking advantage of it?
Yeah. So we have in Slack, for example, both a client channel and a internal client channel. So we have one channel that is externally facing that our client will have access to. And then all of our team members are in there as well. And then we have one for that particular client that the client doesn't have access to, if that makes sense, where it's just us dialoguing internally about that particular client. So that's been a way to sort of distinguish what's necessary to, because I mean, there's multiple reasons. One of them is you don't need to be showcasing all the back and forth that goes on the work to the clients. Like, that's right. Would just be overwhelming. The other thing is to keep that distinguishment of, like, this is, because ultimately people will drop more projects on you than necessarily you have in your scope of work. And so it's good just to be able to keep it a little bit separate. Though, frankly, I field calls all the time on Saturdays and Sundays, but that's just sort of how I am, and that's what I like to do, and we're in a growth stage here, and so that's something that I've just, that's one of the reasons why you work with us, is that I'm always available. Our team members, I don't expect any of our team members to be fielding calls at 8 p.m. on a Friday night or working on the weekends, but that's what I do, and that has been a differentiator for us. With our clients, because it really is that white glove level of service that they are getting out of us that they would not get out of an agency where you work with an account manager, it's 9 to 5. Once that 5 o'clock's over, it's done, which is just not how, it's not a successful relationship, because you need to have an entrepreneurial mindset to be able to work with the small businesses that we are working with. Even though we do work with clients who are like 80 employees, that's still a small business and they're still growing and they're still trying to scale. And there's not these rigid internal processes that you will find at larger companies.
Right. You hit the nail on the head. What was the most rewarding part of starting your business?
I think the most rewarding part is the building out your team. That's probably been the most, it's challenging in terms of being able to find the right fit, but it's definitely been exciting and fun to build the business with others and to put together a group of equally driven individuals who are all going towards the same goal. That's probably been the most rewarding. And then if you can also think about it, sort of you're basically responsible for the livelihood of however many team members you have. And so that's something that is exciting, but also kind of scary at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you're responsible for making sure that, you're continuing to grow the business. You're continuing to bring in that monthly revenue so that you can pay for your employee salaries and for health insurance and all of that stuff. So it's both scary, challenging, and exciting, but also super rewarding, because everybody wins when the company grows. And part of what we've done a really good job of is educating and training people that we brought in a year and a half ago and moving them up, and making sure that we have like a clear trajectory, for some reason, difficult to say that word today, a clear trajectory towards towards growth, because you don't want to come into a company and you're just like, you're stuck in the same spot. Maybe there are people who do want to do that, but that's not the type of people that we want to hire. We want to hire people who want to succeed and continue to grow. And so that's been really rewarding as well, to be able to see that happen in real time, people taking on more responsibility and wearing different hats and moving up in the organization, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also too, as you build out your team, that's how the company grows too, because as more people are able to take on more projects, that's the thing. You get to take on more projects because now you're not kind of relying on just two or three people to get the job done. Now maybe you have six people. And so then that opens up more opportunities for you to be able to accept more work because you're not hitting that bottleneck and kind of feeling overwhelmed and overbooked with everything that you have going on.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
What do you think led to your success?
I think mentorship is definitely important. Having some examples to look up to. And then also just sort of, I don't really know where it came from necessarily, but having a work ethic. I don't know if it came from playing sports all my life or what sort of was the catalyst for that. But just me as my personality is, if I'm not working or doing something, then I sort of get a little freaked out. Like it always feels like I should be doing something, whether it's okay, if I'm not working, all right, like let's go do something. Let's go on a hike. Like I'm very high energy and like to get out there and do things. And so that
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. I think that personality plays well, in being a successful entrepreneur because, you definitely sacrifice a lot of things. Like there's benefits, like of basically complete freedom in the sense that like I could theoretically do anything I wanted to tomorrow. Like I could just get up and leave or go on a trip or something. Obviously I'm not going to do that because I have responsibilities, but you do have that freedom to set your own schedule and do what you will. But then there's days like this last Tuesday where I got up at 8 and then worked till midnight because of all the things that just got flooded in. And then on Friday, for example, it'll probably be lighter. It'll be like a 5-hour day, but then Saturday I'm going to be working again even longer. So it's just being able to scale up and scale down your work effort and still try and maintain a little bit of work-life balance. It's just difficult. So if you definitely have to be super motivated and accepting of the fact that you're just going to have to miss out on some things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like over the past few years, especially, people tend to glorify like the hustle culture, and it's really not something that should be glorified. But what I always say is that sometimes it really is necessary. Like I know for me, and it was probably the same with you since we started our marketing firms at the same age, but like I really had to hustle and grind throughout college in order to be able to build it up and take it full time when graduating. And so like there are times when it's necessary where you really, as you mentioned, have to make the sacrifice and put in the work if you want to get closer to reaching the goals you've set for yourself.
Yeah, it's one thing to work just to work. Like if you're working just for the sake of working, then that's a problem. But if you have like a clear goals or clear things that you need to actually get done, then you just sort of have to do it. And that's why when I was in school, I scheduled my classes Tuesday and Thursday. So I was in class about 8 a.m. to 9:20 p.m. on Tuesday, and then 8 a.m. to 7 on Thursdays. But then I had my Monday, Wednesday, and Friday completely free. And so I had a choice. My Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I could either hang out and sort of do whatever and go to parties or whatever, or I could go get a job and work on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And so you really just have to decide what you want to do and then live with that decision.
Yeah, exactly. If there was one thing you wish you did differently or one thing you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be and why?
I think probably the one thing I would do differently, I mean, it's still very early on, so it's kind of hard to say, but I think valuing our services and what we're doing, probably still don't do as good of a job as we should, because I'm so hyper focused on making sure that every client we have is super satisfied and that I'm in, and we're always in a growth mindset. So we might take things on that are way under what would be a market rate or what is fair compensation. And that's fine when you're growing, especially, but there, it becomes a point where it's like, it's not abuse is a wrong term to use, but it basically is like you get taken advantage of because you are producing such a great product and you're young, and like people see that you're only 23. And so that can sort of creep into the relationship and have a factor there where you might not be getting appropriately compensated. And that's probably the one thing that I would look at from the beginning and sort of realize the value that I was bringing from the get-go, because I think I probably went a little overkill on the, like the free services and all that. I mean, obviously it panned out fine. Mm-hmm. But that, I mean, we still struggle with that, trying to put a value on the services we provide. I mean, we always back out our work to the revenue increase every month, but that varies so widely from company to company, because when you're working with like a 2-person startup, obviously that's drastically different than if you're working with like a 80-person company. And then you get into like, okay, the percentage growth that we're seeing is like 300% for this little startup, but look, that was only an additional $4,000 in revenue, whereas it's like a 10% growth for the 80-person company, but that's like $2 million of revenue. So it's all across the board there. And how do you balance that? Because we love working with the small businesses. And so we've gotten a lot better at being able to work out ways that we can still continue to work with really early stage startups where everybody's appropriately compensated and we're not just doing it for free. So that's probably the thing that I would get to sooner rather than later.
That is an excellent point, and something that I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with, myself included, especially in the beginning, because a big reason why people take on kind of projects for prices lower than what they should be is a few reasons. One, they're worried that people won't pay a larger price. Two, as you mentioned, you're not sure if it's valued at what you think it should be. And three, I think we face imposter syndrome, where we kind of doubt if we're actually worth the larger price, and then we kind of lowball ourselves because we don't think that we're worth like the higher price. And so it's definitely something that's really hard to kind of get past and realize that you deserve to charge more because you know what you're able to provide to your clients. But getting the clients and potential clients to see that is, I think, what's most challenging.
Yeah. You also, for me, I always think about it in terms of hourly rate, which is like the wrong way to think about it, because if we bring on a client right now, they're not paying us for the hours that we're going to be working on their particular project, because we've set up, let's say, like 30 Shopify sites. So obviously it's going to take us so much less time than it would take somebody who hasn't set one up before. But how do you, so really what you're paying for is you're paying for the expertise. And so it doesn't, I always used to think about it as, oh my God, like I can't believe we're going to try and charge them this much because it's really only going to take us like 4 hours to set this up. I'm like, well, yeah, because it's only going to take us 4 hours because we've done it 100 times and we're experts at that particular thing. So trying to get away from thinking about it in terms of hourly rate, that's been really helpful for me, because I used to think about it like, oh, like not that we're ripping them off, but so many stories we've heard in the past from people who come from other agencies or have had bad experiences was that you just pay for a lot and you don't get a lot. And so we've tried to be as conscious of that as possible. And so I always used to think about it, trying to back it out to an hourly wage, but that's just not really how it works.
I think that's a great point that you brought up, and I'm so glad that you did, because that's another thing that's so important for entrepreneurs to learn, is that you get to a point where you really can't think about that hourly rate, because as you said, you can do something so much faster, but that's because you've been doing it for years now. So it's not really fair to get compensated hourly because you've spent all that time investing in your education, knowledge, all of that stuff, both through time and money, to get to where you are. So I'm glad that you said that, because I think it's something a lot of people need to hear.
Yeah, and it's something that we're still learning. It's hard to break away from that mindset.
Definitely. Why do you think it's so important for individuals to start a business at a young age specifically?
I think it's a good time because there's not a lot of risk. I mean, unless, at least in my case, it's not like I have a family in terms of like a wife and kids that I have to support. It really is just me and my dog. So there's less responsibility, which inherently with less responsibility, there's less risk of it. If it fails, okay. It's not like I'm also failing others as well. It really is a good time, I think, because of that. And you're able to, if you can fail early and learn early, then you'll just be better set up for the future. And you can also, I think, even if you go from an entrepreneurial sort of your entrepreneurial adventure and you back off of it or it fails and then you go into more of a corporate setting, I think that mindset still plays really well in big companies because you sort of need someone who's a mover and a shaker and thinks a little bit differently and has that experience of growing and scaling a company and managing other people. And so I think even if you do sort of back off your entrepreneur pursuit and go down more of a traditional path, I think it pays dividends there as well.
Yes. It's like the whole idea of intrapreneurship. So being able to kind of bring ideas to the table inside a company that you may be working for. And that's a great thing that you brought up as well, is just the fact that if you do take the entrepreneurship route and realize that it's not something that you want to continue doing, that it is okay to end up switching gears and shifting to the corporate route or the 9-to-5 route to find something that works better for you. I actually had a previous podcast guest who said he gives more kudos to people who get out of entrepreneurship then get into it. And I was like, whoa, it's a powerful statement, but so true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting way to think about it. But I guess I would be very hard pressed to get out of entrepreneurship now. Though I don't have a reason to right now, but I guess if you could get trapped in like a circle of your company can't grow any further and you sort of hit a wall, but you don't leave and adjust, and because that's probably scary too for a first-time entrepreneur to give up on their first idea and have to pivot to a second one or have to pivot back into more of a traditional work environment.
Yes, absolutely. Brandon, you shared such great advice throughout this episode. And now I'd love to ask you that if there was one last piece that you could share with our listeners, what would it be?
I think ask a lot of questions, reach out to people who have been there and done that before, try to learn from their mistakes and grow from that. You'll make a lot of really great connections that way and develop relationships with mentors. And that's definitely the best way to learn and to succeed, is to get that one-to-one hands-on advice from another entrepreneur.
I think that's great. And especially one thing to do with that too is like to really surround yourself with people who have the business model that you want, because then those questions really come into play here of being able to find out how you can build a business similar to that from their own experience and lessons.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, Brandon, this has been such a great episode. And now I'd love if you could share where our listeners can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Yeah, so you can message me on LinkedIn. It's just Brandon Amoroso. Or you can find us at our website, which is electricmarketing.com. But it's electric with a Q at the end of electric instead of the regular spelling. So a little play there. But either one of those is the best way to contact me. If you go through the website, I pop up in the bottom right corner of a little chat bot. And if you go to LinkedIn, you can just shoot me a direct message.
Perfect. And I'll include links in the show notes to those places. That way people can click through there in case they missed it. But Brandon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you for having me. It was great chatting with you.
Thanks so much for listening today. I'd love it if you could subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with those who could use it most. For show notes and more information, go to studenttoceo.com/podcast.